Blog Talk Radio.
There's no reason for you to find fault in me. There's no reason for me to find fault in you. And none of us are perfect, but we are as perfect as we were created. After all, we feel the same sun, breathe the same air, live on the same earth, and under the same sky. So let's just get it right now. Cause you have a soul like I do, so I have no right to judge you. Cause the minute I do is a reflection of how I feel about me.
Difficult for me to be without y'all, and hopefully if we can generate some interest in the program, it'll be hard for y'all to get along without me. But I hope everything has been going well with y'all, and I just kind of want to, everything has not been going so great with me, and it really calls me to delve into a subject that is very, very important, a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, and for numerous reasons. And I think that people are not as open to talk about it as we should be because of the stigmas involved with it. We're not as willing to deal with, just on a lay person's level, deal with the problems that we face. And if you want to know what I'm talking about mental illness in our community. I talk about it because my personal experiences that I've come to realize for whatever reason, my own mental illness, the mental illness that plagues my family, and to begin to come clean and look at the circumstances that are circling around this. And I think that that in itself is enough to open up for some dialogue. What I'm coming across is there's a lot of names and terms that you hear all the time. You hear, well, what, bipolar, schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia, BPD, borderline personality disorder, and narcissistic behaviors or codependency behavior. I think there's a lot of codependent behavior in myself, and I'm beginning to recognize these things in myself. And so when you really want to heal in this lifetime, you begin to look at your behaviors and the patterns that you're setting and the things that you do, and you begin to say, hey, you know, this is affecting my quality of life. You know, I want some stuff to jump off a little better than this. And I don't think that, you know, things are happening as well as I'd like for them to happen. So with that being said, you know, I begin to, again, charity begins at home and then it spreads abroad. But I noticed that in our community, it's like almost the walking dead. You got people running around who are emotionally retarded, who are unable to accept any kind of criticism, any type of, if not even criticism. In fact, you got people who don't even understand and can't handle the word no. So that means you're creating a bunch of generation of people where we just got to say yes to, because they can't emotionally handle you saying no to them. And if you do, then there's some motive and, you know, they feel that they've been disrespected to the fullest extent. So I'm going on to say that because as a child, my mom entertained a lot of people, looking back on it in hindsight, that were delusional. I remember a lady that would come by who eventually ended up being the mother of the young man who stalked Johnny Carson. I'm sure y'all remember. And she would come by our house, and she would begin to tell us all these delusional stories, you know, stories about, you know, how she was stuck in the bathroom, and her son, of course, she'd be stuck in the bathroom, and she couldn't get out, and her son, being of all this infinite wisdom, would stick a toothpick through the keyhole and pull her out. Now, she'll be saying this type of bizarre stuff, or like they needed money, because they would always be over at our house, you know, asking for money, because of course my parents worked, and obviously my mother used to always have a little money laying around, because people used to always come by and borrow money. I think my mom was kind of bored, and sometimes she would be entertained by these stories at my expense, because either the lady was braiding my hair, so she's putting all the energy into my head, and while I'm listening to all these bizarre type of stories about herself and, you know, her life and her son, and again, them needing money, and him standing out on the front porch and waving his hand, and money flies from everywhere, or how he rode a chariot, to, you know, just a bunch of bizarre stories. And this young man, he eventually ended up being a stalker of Johnny Carson, who lived right in my community, who was a member of our church, and whom his mother said that she never had sex to conceive him, and he was born of an immaculate conception. Well, I guess when the people in church got a load of that story, they were like, you know, we got to put you on silence. And then eventually, you know, she didn't want to come back. Now, there's a bunch of stories in the community that I can rattle off. You know, I remember a young man that lived in our community that said he had a car, and then in his car he could push a button and it would turn from chrome on the top to suede, and all he had to do was flick a button. So now I'm wondering, why is all these crazy people around where I live? Because this is, you know, I don't remember it being experiencing it as a child, real small, but I'm saying growing up in maybe my teenage years now. So these are the kind of, this is nothing new. Then we go back to our history as far as the plantation and all the mental abuse that was put up on us. All of the atrocities and the Holocaust that we had to experience, there's no way in the hell that you could have experienced all that psychological, emotional, and mental trauma without being affected, and for your seed's generation to be infected with just a cellular trauma of some of the things that the white slave master did to the black African when he was brought over here. So when you think about generation after generation after generation of mental illness, and then having suppressed what you feel because of white supremacy, and you can't really express how you really feel about certain things because basically it's like the wolf is guarding the hen house. So there's there's a very paralyzing, demoralizing condition that affects you when you're not able to express yourself the way you would like to. I'm having to kind of rely on Amos Wilson a little bit when he said, "We must recognize that contradiction in this society is of major importance in determining the problems of our communities. That is, it is the people without love at all who talk most often about love. It is the people who are ready to go to war and who have gone to war and destroyed hundreds and thousands of people who talk about peace. It is the people who destroy our children's minds in school who talk a great deal about education. And we will see these kinds of contradictions going on and on and on repeatedly. We will see even the very legal structure of the system and its contradictions which conspire to destroy those who are not a part of the ruling class or group." So when we put it in a kind of a historical context, we can see that it is a beneficial to the system of white supremacy, of course, to keep us off guard, off rhythm, off task, and it becomes successful in taking the people. They have been very successful in taking the people who are diabolically based and rooted in rhythm to throw them off. Okay, so if you do that for generation after generation, after at least four or five generations, you have even more sicker people. And when you put that in historical context with the people who started America, who were all the people from the jails and the nut houses and the dregs of England's population, they were the ones who were sent over here to start this country. So they're the ones who mixed with us. Okay, so there's a lot of mental illness and a lot of perspectives going on. So then you got subgroups, in my opinion, of course, under this, that come out, you know, and then we get what we have now, which is the black community, in my opinion, is a graveyard. It's a cemetery, and it's an insane asylum without doors, okay? I said it many times, and it's scary sometimes when you walk in our community, the conglomerate of issues that are plaguing us, when you have very beautiful, sometimes respectful, loving people who just seem to can't get their lives together and who just can't seem to move past certain things about their personality or their lives that are keeping them sick or behind the eight ball. Now, focusing on myself, I had to rely on my codependent behavior, and I think it's because of having a very loving yet a family that, you know, sometimes I feel like I, when I really look at the dynamic of my family, I think sometimes I said, was I really able to express myself? I think my mom would always, you know, my mom didn't have a problem with telling us, you know, how great we were, but then she didn't have a problem either because she didn't have a lot of patience telling us how stupid we were, okay? And so sometimes girls, on the other hand, we tend to eternalize stuff a little bit more, be a little bit more emotional about certain things. So maybe it's some degree because of her dominating and not really allowing me the opportunity to express my individual self. This is how I felt. Yeah. I think I acted out in different ways that maybe should have been some warning flag. Okay? Okay, I'm listening to all these crazy people. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on here. Okay. So, when I look at my neighbors, I'm like, wow, they had four or five brothers that their mental illnesses might have led them to have a life of crime. And stuff like, they were peeing in the bed. There were some neighbors I know that they had older siblings that peed in the bed. And they were early teenagers. That's certainly red flags. Or wanting to set animals on fire. So these are the kind of things that I remember seeing as time went on and we grew up in the neighborhood progressed. Okay? We became more predominantly black. Now, with that being said, I started to delve in being involved with the relationships and partnerships, came upon a lot of people who have been traumatized in their lives. No matter how much time I get in a relationship, I'm drawing these people to me who have been traumatized because maybe my personality is drawing these people to me, okay? And there's something that I'm either looking for in these people. I don't know if it's because I'm feeling like there's something I can do, which is soothing me while I'm seeking these people or I'm being drawn to them or here. But the bottom line is, it seems like sexual abuse becomes the overtone of it. And there is a certain amount of, depression and, the behaviors that come along with those type of narcissistic behaviors. So what I did was I was searching the net and I came upon, a couple of Caucasian people talking about borderline personalities or and things, and they were, it was a guy named Paul Elam. And he's got a website called voiceformen.com. And also a Dr. Tara Palmier. And what I wanted to share with you guys was their take pretty much on a popular disorder where I feel a lot in the African community is this borderline personality disorder where, like I said, you say something to somebody they don't like, as opposed to being objective or taking any responsibility for anything that has been said, or they are quick to just go from zero to 160 in rage. So they said that information that was pretty interesting, and I really wanted to share it with y'all. And I hope that you can hear it, and the volume is pretty good on it. Because I'm going to share it with you all right now. So, if you can, just take a listen.
But part of the problem with this, and I want to go back to it, is that we are talking about a problem of character, not a mental disease. There is a big difference between true clinical depression and somebody who's pissed off because they didn't get their way 28 out of 28 times during the course of a week. So what are people to do now? And how do we help borderline?
relationship, you need to be loving and supportive and empathetic. You know, I believe radical acceptance is something that this brings from Buddhism, but I think for the individual who is, say, married to a BPD, radical acceptance means truly accepting, you didn't break this person, you can't love this person well, and if you're going to stay with this person, you need to accept that many of these behaviors, these abuses, are not likely to change. And if you're okay with that, or want to put up with that, then stay in it. If you're not, then you have some tough decisions to make. But it gets twisted around to mean that you must accept the borderline and all of his or her pathology and their abuses. And I think that's just downright enabling behavior. I think they are enabling abuse. The other issue I have with many of these websites is that they serve a dual purpose of supporting individuals with BPD and the people who are being abused by them. You know, you can't serve two masters. So if you read these websites such as this, you'll see the individuals with BPD will attack people who say anything critical about their loved one with BPD, and it becomes an echo chamber. And I think it's really dangerous. And in fact, we chose today's topic because I received an email from a gentleman. Do you mind if I read it all? It's not too very long. So I received an email from somebody who stumbled across my website. Hello, first of all, I want to say a massive thank you for your site and all that you've done. Nice things about me, we don't get to the end of that. I am a man raised by a narcissistic mother who went on to spend 3 years of my life with a borderline personality disordered woman who is thankfully my ex. The relationship with that woman tore my heart out, and it has taken me a long time to recover, in part because I did not know or understand what was happening until I started reading websites like yours. What worries me is that a lot of websites about BPD seem more concerned with not offending those who suffer from BPD than helping their victims. Rather than screaming, get out, when people ask for advice, they instead go on and on about the feelings of the BPD abuser and excuse their behavior by saying it's not their fault and that they don't know what they're doing. On these websites, all but the mildest criticism of BPD people are forbidden. Putting the concerns of BPD people above their partners or families seems to be a growing trend on many mental health websites, and one that leaves me worried, as it may prevent the people who really need help from getting it or the advice they need. It was only once I understood what I had been through that I could begin putting my life back together. Is this something you have noticed? Yes. Can anything be done? Or is it perhaps inevitable given the nature of BPD and their fear of rejection and criticism?
That is an excellent email. I want to go back for a second to something else you were talking about just before you read it. And this is just a personal opinion. Take it or leave it for whatever it's worth. But if you look at a relationship that is marked by your constant abuse and the emotional ability of your partner and constantly being attacked and not knowing what's coming around the corner next, what's going to hit you next every 5 minutes from their mood swings, if that is okay with you, it is my personal opinion that there is something deeply, deeply wrong with you that you need to seek help for and to find out why that you're willing to take such abuse.
People who are healthy, you know, relatively mentally healthy, who have healthy self-esteem and self-respect, do not tolerate these kinds of behaviors from the people who claim to love them. You just don't.
I want to make a recommendation here, too, and for whatever it's worth. Part of the problem, as we've been identifying, is that there is a very much a shortage in the mental health community of people that have the intelligence and the skills and the willingness to take on things like personality disorders and actually try to help these people, rather because it is much easier to enable them than it is to help them. helping them requires a lot of skill, a lot of intelligence, a lot of sophistication in how you approach
incredibly, them. Incredibly thick skin, because they, when you hold them accountable, the BP individual will lash out and abuse their therapist just like they would their husband or boyfriend or child or parent.
Exactly. And now let's say that you're a guy that stumbles on this video and you have a partner whom you suspect may be borderline or have borderline traits, or that all this behavior is sounding familiar to you. And a lot of times what these people will do is they will insist on getting therapy with having it in mind that the therapist is going to collude with them in order to attack you, and they're often right. So here, I just want to make one suggestion that you can do. If you feel pressured to go into marital therapy as a guy, and you've decided that you're going to give in to that, and you're going to go see a marriage counselor, go pick the counselor yourself and see them yourself the first time. And this is not to go in and tell them what a bad wife you have or what a bad partner, or to try to do what the borderline would do, which is to get them to collude with you. But you really do, before you get into a marriage counseling situation, if you have a personality disordered partner, you need to know what you're dealing with on the other side of the chair in the therapist. You
need
to ask them very pointed questions about their knowledge of borderline personalities, of personality disorders, and about how people should react to that. And if you hear a hint of enabling, if you hear a hint of them being hesitant to talk about your having boundaries that aren't supposed to be crossed, and that you're supposed to protect yourself in a relationship or lead it, then you're in the wrong place. So whatever you spent on that session was pennies on the dollar compared to what you'll spend ending up with a therapist that's going to set up to play your wife's advocate in a couple session that is really for her benefit as a personality disorder.
And to that screening criteria, I would also throw in, ask the therapist flat out, do you believe women are capable of abusing their husbands and boyfriends? Do you believe men can be abuse victims too? And if you get, well, yes, but only in very rare situations.
Run.
Go find yourself. Find yourself somebody else. If they give you a rasher of crap about, well, what do you know about personality disorders? Are you a psychiatrist? Are you a social worker? Are you a mental health expert? Just get out. Get out of their office. You know what? This is the digital age. If you've been living with someone for 10 years and you have half a brain and are paying attention, it's not rocket science to type into a search engine the symptoms and behaviors you've been observing and experiencing and get an understanding on what might be the problem. No, you're not qualified to make an official diagnosis, but you certainly are qualified to understand what you have experienced firsthand. So if you find yourself in front of a therapist who has that attitude, keep looking. One more thing. I had a client who was dating a female graduate student in psychology. And, you know, he had been, had false allegations against him, told this woman he was dating that he suspected that his ex had BPD. And she said, well, then you need to feel sorry for her. Meanwhile, he almost went to jail for stuff that didn't happen. And this future psychologist was telling this man that, no, he wasn't the victim, even though he almost went to jail, lost his career, had to pay tens of thousands of dollars in fees to an attorney to straighten out this mess. No, he needed to feel sorry for her. And then she said, This is the grubby little fingerprints of feminism in the field of psychology. She went on to say, and anyway, when a woman is having problems like that and behaving like that, most of the time it can be traced back to something a man did to her.
There's your signal to run right there. And let's say we need to say this and qualify it. guys, if your partner who is telling you that we need to go to therapy to get our problems sorted out, which is code speak, where we need to drag you in to somebody that will help me bully you into acting like I want you to, if they are exhibiting behaviors that are very consistent with the things that we're talking about, making false accusations, destroying property, self-mutilating, making threats of suicide to get their way, saying, what do you mean you have to check mail? Why can't I go with you? If it is that bad in your relationship, guys, you do not need a therapist. You need an attorney.
If you're married.
And then maybe even if you're not, if you're living with somebody.
Sometimes you need the jaws of life to extract someone like that out of your home or apartment.
And the other thing you need is a car, which you can get in and throw your bags in and drive away. We are talking about a very thin line here. When you're at the point, usually, I mean, a marriage therapist will tell you this all the time, because this is how they explain their failures in therapy, is to say that people wait too late. They wait until there's too many problems. Well, of course they wait till there's fucking problems. Why would they go to a therapist if they weren't having problems? But that little sales pitch for family therapy and that little bit of excusing their failure to perform in that aside. If you are really dealing with somebody who is characterologically, say that fast three times, a mess, and who has really bad character, is really destructive to you and harming your life, you're wasting your time with a therapist. Don't go see a therapist. Maybe see one for you. If you can't figure out why you're not already fucking gone, then go see a therapist about that and talk to them and find one that really cares that men can be abuse victims too. But you really don't need a therapist in most of these cases. What you need is out. And, again, I understand. People with borderline personality disorder suffer. Folks, they hurt so much sometimes they self-mutilate to control pain. And to get attention, and they're out of control. And no, there is a certain amount of truth to the fact. Nobody asked to be this way. Nobody wants to have a borderline personality disorder. And they are people that are deeply affected by their problems. But they have at least the ability to get help from qualified help where people aren't enabling them. And the fact of the matter is that their victims suffer more than they do. One borderline can be compared to what any other serial abuser does in any way. They can be a wrecking ball to the lives of one person after another, after another, after another, their whole lives, causing all sorts of destruction.
And not just their partners. If this happens, they will abuse their children, and the transmission of abuse occurs in yet another generation, which is another good reason to look at your girlfriend or fiance's parents and family dynamic, because often this happens generation after generation after generation unless something is done to break that cycle.
You know, Dr. T brought up something before we started this program today that I think is also really important. She read a partial list of criteria about borderline personality disorder. Like I said, go in and Google borderline personality disorder, read up on it. If you think becoming an expert in the disorder is what people do, then fine, go ahead and do that. I would argue that it's not, that you just look at behaviors. But one of the things she added to the list is, if your girlfriend shot her last boyfriend, there's a real reason, guys. And I know she had a really good reason for it. But if she shot him or stabbed him or ran him over with a car or hit him in the head with a pipe wrench or squirted lighter fluid on his crotch and set it on fire, all of these things I'm thinking of came from news stories, by the way. I'm not just making them up as they go along, as I go along here. But if she did one of those things to her last boyfriend, criteria that you need to meet.
Or if she has a room wallpaper with restraining orders that she obtained against ex-boyfriends and ex-husbands, make like the roadrunner and meet me.
Which, of course, brings us right up against the same wall we run into every time, and I think that's probably good enough to have, you know, some of our closing thoughts aim in this direction. Is the biggest enablers of borderlines are often their victims.
Yeah.
Men who tolerate abuse, men who will try to do anything to please them until they blow up and become abusers themselves, that's often the cycle, you know. Much of male violence, and there was a sportscaster, I can't remember his name, from ESPN recently that was suspended.
Smith.
Yeah, because he made the inference that women can provoke and abuse their way into volatile situations and relationships, and he advised not to do that. So, of course, he was suspended immediately. Although what he said was absolutely 100% spot on, correct. You can emotionally abuse somebody to the point that they react physically. Anybody that does not believe that or think that it can happen, you're out of your mind. No, am I justifying violence? No, I'm not justifying violence. Am I justifying violence against women? No, I'm not justifying violence against women. What I'm telling you, or men, what I'm telling you is that if you spend every day for years belittling and emotionally terrorizing somebody, if you put any dog in a corner long enough and kick it, it will eventually come out and bite the living shit out of you. And that is a natural consequence of constant abuse of somebody. So we know how bad things are in this society when a sportscaster gets suspended from his job for telling the truth about what can lead to physical abuse in relationships. Imagine how bad it is in some psychotherapy sessions going on right now.
Well, cherry pickers, get ready. We're about to give you a juicy one. oftentimes, when you're dealing with someone with borderline personality disorder, they want to play the victim, and they will deliberately provoke and abuse because I'm not saying they want to get hit or beat up, but they oftentimes behave the way they do because they want to elicit an emotional response from their target, like anger, rage, and sometimes physical violence. And then once they do, the hours or days or weeks of intense emotional and sometimes physical abuse that they themselves have perpetrated are washed away as if they never existed. And it's, you're a monster. How could you tell me? Shut the fuck up. How could you call me a bitch? You're the one with the anger problem. You hit me. You're an abuser.
And the typical guy's reaction in that situation, who gets caught in that cycle, is to spiral deeply into shame. And to hang his head down and become a puppy that will take anything for a long, long time, and it will be coming to him, because that's exactly her reason for making this happen, is so that she can control him. And that
that's
he will
right.
get more abuse, and then it will build up again, and he will explode again, and then she will be right back in total control of everything, because he does not figure out that he's being interviewed. Oh, it seems Dr. T had a phone call.
Now, with that being said, I thought that little piece of tidbit, we're going to build on that, because I think that that's what I'm experiencing, I was experiencing in my personal life. I'm continuing to work through the abuse mentally, emotionally, you know, just the intense drama. And as I begin to heal, as I continue to try to heal from this situation, I'm hoping that we are going to have people that are willing to be open and honest, and let's start talking about our healing, our schizophrenia issues, bipolar issues, BPD issues, narcissistic issues, whatever it is that is holding us back from being the best people that we can be. We're going to have to be willing to put this stuff out on the table, fam. We're going to have to be willing to say, listen, I'm living okay, but I think I can be living a better quality of life. And with God and my ancestors' grace, and with their power, and with their wind blowing through me, then I'm going to get the best quality out of my life. Because I'm going to begin to deal with the things that are weighing me down. So I want you to stay tuned for part two. As you know, the clock on the wall. Goodness, this time is went a little quick. But I'm going to continue to delve in this for a little while. Maybe next time we'll get a little bit more participation. And maybe I can put some hype around this, and maybe we can begin to start some dialogue and some healing around the things that we're doing to each other mentally, emotionally, and physically in the community that is keeping us sick. Now, until then, y'all be good. And Hotep.
Like an artist, when Brahma be saying there ain't gonna be nothing, my daddy be saying there ain't gonna be nothing, even some teachers did slow-mo moments, cause I be playing and stuff, but I still know what I wanna do. I don't know if that mad stuff, because they done achieve their goals and keep their hope alive. I feel like they be putting it all on me.
Don't lose your hope. stump, stump, crush, crush, rush, rush, crack, crack, that's whack. I adapt to the fact that I can't be held back. Somebody need to tell somebody that I shall rise, rise, rise and never fall, cause I've already reached the bottom to the top. For hope, hope has brought me there. So inhale me deeply and breathe. You
don't lose your hope.